Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.
Johannesburg's crisis is no longer just about potholes and power cuts. It is now about whether South Africa's biggest city can keep its finances, services, and confidence from collapsing further. Good morning. This is BizNews Daybreak. I'm Asi Benyite. Coming up, the latest overnight world news from Bloomberg, Helen Ziller on what she has seen on the ground in Joburg, Davi Root on Treasury's fight with crypto, Rob Hodson on why business has to push back, and AfriForum's Jacques Broederick on the long-delayed effort to bring the Guptas back to South Africa. We begin with the global picture. First up, our partners at Bloomberg give us the latest overnight world news.
House Republican leaders abruptly canceled a vote tonight on the Iran war. This move came after GOP absences threatened an embarrassing defeat for President Trump. And this maneuver follows a tie vote in the House last week on a resolution to halt U.S. military action against Iran. Now, Democrats have been forcing repeated votes on this unpopular conflict, one that's taken an economic toll on Americans. Iran says the latest peace proposal from the U.S. has narrowed the gaps to some extent. That's according to the semi-official Iranian Students News Agency. And while that signals progress, Reuters was reporting earlier that Supreme Leader Mojtaba Khamenei issued a directive that Iran's near-weapons-grade uranium should not be sent abroad. And at the same time, Iran is in talks with Oman on creating a permanent toll system for maritime traffic through the Strait of Hormuz. That's according to the Iranian ambassador to France. Now, President Trump has rejected this idea. We heard today from U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio.
Well, we've always said a tolling system in the Straits would be unacceptable, but we don't just say that. The world has said that. We have a resolution right now in the United Nations. We're trying to take it to the Security Council. It's sponsored by Bahrain. It has over 100 something in it. The highest number of co-sponsors in the history of the Security Council have signed on to our resolution.
U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Now, Iran is refusing to reopen the Strait of Hormuz until the U.S. agrees to lift its naval blockade of Iranian ports. Here is retired U.S. Army General and former CIA Director David Petraeus.
Right now, they are insistent that they are given control of the Gulf, of the Strait. And that they are able to charge tolls for it. That's just, I think, unacceptable. And it may be that we have to go back to war to show them that we're pretty serious about this.
SpaceX scrubbed a critical test of its massive Starship rocket on Thursday evening. The company said the hydraulic pin holding the tower arm in place did not retract. Now, this would have been the 12th major test mission of the Starship rocket, and it was scheduled just one day after SpaceX filed publicly for its initial public offering. The company says there will be another launch attempt Friday at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. In business news, Zoom Communications is projecting stronger than anticipated sales growth. Revenue will be as much as $5.09 billion in the fiscal year ending January. Shares in Zoom are up by more than 7% in late U.S. trading. The Trump administration has agreed to award $1 billion to IBM to build a foundry for producing quantum computing chips. IBM will also invest $1 billion into a new company called Anduron, which will produce the processors. Shares in IBM climbed 12% today.
Back home, we begin in Johannesburg, where the city's problems are becoming harder to dress up. Helen Ziller, who has been campaigning for mayor, says the situation is worse than she expected after months on the ground. She points to failing water and electricity systems, broken roads, potholes, weak service delivery, and a city budget under serious pressure. Her warning is that residents are now paying twice, once through rates and taxes, and again through community efforts to fix what the city no longer does properly. Here's Zilla on what she has found in Joburg.
Well, Alec, things are actually a lot worse than I expected. And the people are doing a lot more than I assumed. It's amazing how many active citizens there are in Joburg solving problems. Last night I was at a meeting And the representative of a ratepayers association said to me that eventually, in complete exasperation, they had collected money from their entire suburb and are now hiring contractors to fill their potholes. I mean, this is the kind of thing that goes down in Joburg. So people pay their rates and taxes and their service charges, but they don't get the services. And then you look into things and you get really worried, all expressed in the Minister of Finance's very forthright letter, basically telling the mayor his budget is not funded, he is in a huge hole, and he must stop promising to dole out money that he doesn't have. But yesterday he proceeded to say, well, no, their budget is funded, and now they're going to continue as if there's no tomorrow. And that is incredibly worrying. He said, for example, the politically facilitated agreement is up and running. It has started being paid out, the one that the minister expressly forbade him from continuing with. So it really seems as if the city of Joburg is cocking a snook at the National Minister of Finance. And I don't know whether he will have the cojones to say to Joburg, well, you're not getting your equitable share. But it would be disastrous for Joburg if they lost their equitable share. So I'm hoping there's another plan that can be made.
From city finances to the future of money. Economist Davi Root says Treasury's attempt to control crypto reflects a deeper problem. Government is trying to regulate a technology it may not fully understand. His point is that crypto is not only Bitcoin and it is not automatically criminal. The real issue is the underlying blockchain technology and how stablecoins and digital assets could change cross-border payments, banking, and currency control. For South Africa, that raises a very direct question. How do you enforce exchange controls when value can move like information over the internet? Here's Davi Root.
Hello, Alec. They're always really nice talking to you. Maybe we can just talk a little bit about cryptos. When you talk about crypto, people usually think you are talking about Bitcoin and Bitcoin only. There's much more to cryptos than only Bitcoin. The important thing here has to do with the underlying technology. And this underlying technology, of course, is a blockchain technology. And in fact, it's not that people think also that if you use cryptos that you're some sort of criminal somewhere and you're trying to launder money or you're selling drugs or whatever the case may be. That certainly is not the case. There are many, many kinds of cryptos. And in fact, the authorities are starting to use this specific cryptos or the underlying technology. And examples of that are things like, for example, central bank digital currencies. But there's a new thing. There's a new thing that are being used more and more, and that's so-called stable coins, and that's also on the blockchain technology. And stable coins are typically a coin that is issued backed by something. And the most popular stable coin is a US dollar stable coin, backed by either US dollars or treasury bills or whatever the case might be. And this is being used especially in wholesale transactions. What's currently happening in the Gulf, for example, many of these big tankers or the oil are sold, making use of so-called stable coins. There's a lot of wholesale transactions happening in Europe, for instance, making use of US dollar stable coins. And in fact, the European Central Bank is getting a little bit concerned about that. But the good thing for Africa is that US dollar stable coins or other stable coins can be used as retail money as well in Africa. And that can potentially force out some of these smaller currencies in Africa as well. But the point I want to make here is that crypto is information. It is, and it's like a WhatsApp message, or it's a message that you send on the internet, and that information contains certain, well, potentially value in the case of crypto coins, for example, Bitcoin or stable coins or whatever the case might be. But it's not limited to a geographic area. Information is not limited to South Africa or anywhere. And this is where maybe some another piece of information, and that is that we have foreign exchange regulations in South Africa, which means that I get, as an adult man, I get an allowance from Minister of Finance allowing me to take some money out of the country. And this is the big difference between normal money like rands and crypto money, is that normal money can be stopped from leaving the country, and I say in inverted commas because it never leaves the country, leaving the country because it needs to go through certain channels like the banking system, while in the case of crypto, I can move it wherever I want to, as long as I've got an internet connection and nobody can stop me. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to stop. And that's impossible. That's impossible to stop it.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it counts. Bonitas Medical Aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
Next, to the private sector and the question of how business responds when the state overreaches. Rob Hodson, founder and CEO of Thirsty, says South African businesses cannot simply hope for a better country while accepting everything thrown at them. His argument is that when something is wrong, business has to stand up, push back, and defend what is fair and right. It is a message that goes beyond one company. It speaks to a wider mood among South Africans who are becoming less willing to accept dysfunction as normal. Here's Rob Hodson.
If you don't stand up and you don't push back against the stuff, you simply get washed away in the tide. And we are very proud South Africans. We love our country. We're here to stay. We're not going anywhere. And we also, like everybody else, we stand and hope for a better country. But we can't just hope. We've actually got to do something about it. And so what happened was unfortunate. But what's more important is that if you don't agree with something, you've got to stand up. You've got to push back. It is easier for us as a private business to do that. You know, if you're a public business and you've got shareholders it becomes infinitely more complicated. Obviously, we also, there is a fine line in terms of standing up for what's good and true and right. And what's been most pleasing to note is how many people have supported that stand, how many people have seen that and spoken to us, emailed us, called us to say, geez, guys, well done. You give us hope, you know. We all need to do that. That's the way to deal with these things. There seems to be a fundamental shift in South Africans where instead of accepting whatever has been dished up in the past, guys have had enough, and guys are just saying what's fair and right and true we go with, and what's not we object violently to it.
And finally, back to one of the longest-running unfinished chapters of state capture. AfriForum has asked the National Director of Public Prosecutions, Advocate Andy Motsebe, for an urgent update on the delayed extradition of the Guptas. AfriForum's Jacques Broderick says too much was promised, too little has happened, and the public still does not know where the process stands. His concern is that without sustained pressure, the matter could quietly disappear into the usual South African fog of delay, technicalities, and no consequences.
Well, basically, we want to know where this process is at the moment, because we know a lot was said about the Guptas are getting extradited. We know the previous head of the NPA, Advocate Shamila Batoi, held press conferences about this and released statements. And it was a big thing that they're finally going to take action against these state capture suspects. And then it all just went quiet. Nothing came of it. Now, from what we understand, according to the NPA's latest public communications regarding this matter, is that the extradition application was turned down because of an administrative issue or a technical detail. So if that is the case, then it should have been something that could have been resolved quite easily, and the Guptas should have been back in South Africa by now. So we're hoping that now, under the leadership of Advocate...
Andy Motsebe.
Advocate Motsebe, yes, thank you very much. Under his new leadership, perhaps they'll take this matter seriously again and we can start seeing some action.
Is this the first time you've asked the prosecuting authorities for clarification?
Yes, this is the well, regarding this specific matter, yes, this is the first time. If you go and look at AfriForum's track record, we have had quite a long history with dealing with the National Prosecuting Authority.
Now, over the years, what information have you received on the whereabouts of the Guptas?
Oh, there's nothing that we know about their whereabouts that is not available publicly. From what we understand, they fled to the United Arab Emirates, where they went into hiding after the hawks tried to apprehend them here in their luxurious homes in Johannesburg. And from there on, apparently, there are rumors that they may have moved back to India at the moment, but that's still unclear. But that is something that the National Prosecuting Authority, in cooperation with people like Interpol, would be able to quite resolve quite easily if they just put the political will into the matter.
And that's BizNews Daybreak. I'm Asim Enyitu. Thanks for listening. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. We'll keep track of what matters and leave the noise to everyone else. Cheers.
Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.